This is CliffCentral.com.
I'm wearing an old pair of headphones that I salvaged out of my... Yesterday, it was the weirdest thing for the second hour of the show. I was sitting here on a pair of headphones where only my left ear was working, which is so goddamn annoying. I mean, imagine only seeing out of one eye. That's how it feels when you only hear out of one ear and you're used to hearing in both. And, you know, I've been doing this a long time, so I have a particular sound that I like, and I'm not going to get too much into it, but if I don't have the right headphones, then
Put you off slightly.
Well, I feel like I'm, you know, hobbling into battle with one knee.
Well, for the last...
The other one broken doesn't work.
For the last hour of the show, you had that look of a confused puppy when they tilt their head.
Did I? And you didn't understand why?
I just thought, okay. Let him be.
I always keep like three spares of everything, you know me. Massively over... What's the word? There's an oversupply of extras and in need of emergency break glass stuff. So I've got two pairs of headphones. Turned out that both pairs weren't working.
Oh, no.
So I had to go and dig out a third pair from the cupboard in my office. I managed to find this one, which I probably haven't worn since like 2009. But I use... Again, boring, but for your information, I use a pair of Sony studio monitors, which they made for a while. They made a round version, and they went back to the original version because it's brilliant. They just fit perfectly. They're comfortable. They're just the best headphones for doing a show. Mm. They're not the best headphones for listening to music or anything, but they're the best headphones for doing a show. So if I don't have them, can't do it. I can't do it.
I really am surprised you aren't a hoarder.
No, I am. I mean, look, I hoard certain things.
Or maybe you're an organized hoarder.
Yeah, I'm an organized hoarder. So I keep supplies, but I'm not storing up shit that I don't need. Like, you know, there are people who... you've seen these shows?
I know.
Where these people have, like, piled stuff up all over their house. Like, I don't have a mess. There's no mess around me. But I do keep an excessive quantity of things like light bulbs and... white t-shirts and black t-shirts and what else do I keep a lot of? Stationery.
Yeah.
Oh, we spoke about this, I think, yesterday. Oh. I love me some stationery. So if I find a pen that I like, I go and buy boxes of it.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. You see, I wish I was more rational and productive like you are in stockpiling things.
That's not rational. That's stupid.
Well, to a certain extent, you can justify it.
When I die one day, someone's going to go through like a ton of pens and they go, what is wrong with this guy?
What a weirdo.
He's a weirdo. He was using a computer 90% of the time. Why did he need all these pens?
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
Well, because I still have my christening outfit.
Oh.
I don't know what I'll ever do with it, but as I was in Durban a few weeks ago for the funeral, I was going through some of these things that I have just...
Bring back a box of shit.
...stocked in my bedroom still.
Did you throw it out?
Absolutely not. Don't ask me what I'll do with it. But I still have that. I found the receipt to my very first movie that I went to watch in a cinema.
You can act like a man!
Yeah, no. Clearly not. Clearly not. I don't know what is going on with me, but oh well. It's still all there.
Ah, someone says, oh, to be a fly on the wall to listen to what these two are talking about. And then they've attached a picture of me and a robot that was here yesterday. There was a robot called...
Pepper.
Pepper. Pepper the robot. She's like an educational robot.
Well, they call her a humanoid.
Yeah. She came in here yesterday full of attitude.
We'll put the interview out a couple of probably this week.
It has to be this week because we're doing the My Future 4.0 conference next week, which is actually a really good expo for you to send your kid to. I think a lot of schools are sending kids anyway. A lot of university students are going. A lot of teachers and education professionals. Because the biggest question anyone has right now is, what are the jobs of tomorrow? Right? How can I prepare myself, especially if I'm young?
Right.
And
to future-proof yourself.
Yeah, to make myself useful in the future economy. Because I'll tell you what, if you are going into the future economy thinking, I can be a coal miner, that's okay, it's not going to go well for you, I'm afraid.
Well, the sad thing is now even it's not as drastic as being a coal miner, but there's certain things that some people are still studying that
like,
probably in
like what would you think is just not necessary at the moment?
What is not necessary? Well, it's not necessarily about studying something.
Oh,
but things that people are still doing or applying for. Yes, you need to earn money now, but in 10 years' time, we probably won't be doing that.
Like a lot of the number crunching stuff.
Yes.
It's going to start with basic mathematics. You know, you used to have, and already there are apps that will do your accounting for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know that? You can like scan and take a photograph of an app. I mean, of a receipt, and it'll put it into your books for you.
Thank goodness. Lord knows we in this room need it.
Oh, hell yes. Yeah, absolutely.
But Pepper herself, and by the way, her pronoun is her.
Yeah,
they refer to her as a human being.
Yes.
So her, herself, she even stated things like, you know, people who work at the airport will soon be out of jobs because,
right.
you know, humanoids will take over there. Mm-hmm. In some elements of the schooling system, humanoids can take over there. So it's a bit jarring. I don't know, because I'm still not completely comfortable with it, but I also get it. It is mm-hmm. the future. So my future 4.0, they call it a next level digital skills and career summit. That's happening next week and we'll be there.
Very good.
Yeah.
I think all of this is paling in comparison to the thing that Sia's really excited about today. Sia was so excited about this story yesterday that he was messaging. We've got a little WhatsApp group, like everybody has for everything these days. So Sia, to those people who haven't got it yet, give us the breaking news.
Do you know what I realize? I'm going to be excited about this full on, even though most people don't care about this anymore. But
go on.
Prince Harry, the
yes.
Duchess Meghan,
yes.
have celebrated the arrival of their new bundle of
child.
Joy,
yes.
and it's a baby boy.
Yes.
And in my mind, it's baby Devante or Lamar.
Imagine if they call it Quantaniqua. Baby Quantaniqua has arrived and people is pleased.
Shafar.
Oh my god, yes.
Must be something loaded with ebonics.
So apparently, because this is the big game in the UK at the moment, as soon as a royal baby's born, people are just so involved in this. They get so excited, right?
Like myself.
They're so excited.
And they just can't hide it.
So what they do is they try to guess the name
mm-hmm.
of the baby. And what are they going for? The two favorite names are... Dun, 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 dun. Wait, let me actually do this properly.
Okay.
You want to know what the two names are, Sia?
I actually haven't even heard of these yet. So, yeah, you'll be surprising me.
You're about to hear them. They
can
are...
I guess? Wait.
Yeah, well, before you guess. All right, guess. What the hell?
Charles?
No.
Oh.
No, they're not names in the immediate family.
Oh, okay. Oh,
they are.
Are they traditional names?
James, which is a traditional English and Scottish name.
Mm.
There have been two King Jameses,
mm-hmm.
James I, James II, both in the 1600s.
James.
Mm-hmm.
James is very vanilla.
It is kind of vanilla, but they're going for vanilla.
But so is William and Harry, I guess.
And the other name is not a family name at all, but it's a very popular name. I think it's a great name. I think they should go with this one.
Okay.
Dun, 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 dun. Alexander.
Okay.
You don't like?
I still want Lamar.
They're not going to give it an African-American name. I mean, Meghan isn't even African-American.
Jerome.
Meghan's about as English as it gets, right?
Watermelandria.
Yeah, Watermelandria. Imagine.
Just for the last time to say, hey.
Sia's very excited about this.
I hope the Queen is okay. I'm very disappointed that Samantha Markle still hasn't said anything about this.
You mean your friend Samantha Markle who lets you follow her? You're one of few.
One of the select few.
Like 1,000 people in the world who get to follow Samantha Markle.
What is 6,000?
So even though, I mean, it sounds like a lot, right? But it's tiny, and she's such a celebrity. She's so important.
Yes,
Samantha Markle. That is, of course, the wheelchair-bound half-sister of Meghan Markle.
Did we have to stipulate?
I wonder if they've sent each other, you know, messages. Maybe no. Meghan's got something from Sam already to say, hey, congratulations.
Mm-mm.
Huh? No?
Nope, because Sam isn't on social media much anymore. And
that's
also Thomas Markle, Meghan's...
That's Meghan and Samantha's father.
Yes.
Yes.
I think has also been reprimanded heavily in the past because he didn't say anything horrible. Mm-hmm. He only just put out one official statement that he shared with the Sun newspaper. And he said, I'm delighted to hear that mother and child are doing well. I'm proud that my new grandson is born into the British royal family. And I'm sure that he will grow up to serve the crown and the people of Britain with grace, dignity and honor. Why do I feel like he's been threatened to say this?
No,
like, say anything else.
I think he's tried
stupid.
He's tried everything else already and it's just got him nothing but grief. Yeah. And his daughter won't talk to him. So this is just his next strategy.
Yeah, he concluded by saying, God bless the child and I wish him health and happiness. And my congratulations to my lovely daughter, Duchess Meghan and Prince Harry, and God save the Queen. Yeah, he's definitely dotted his I's and crossed his T's since the wedding and he was trying to force himself onto it.
I hate that fucking family, says someone online. Born into wealth from stolen riches and on the backs of slavery. Fuck the royal family.
Okay.
Well, that look, it's partly true, but only a tiny part of what they made is slavery, because the Brits basically were enslaved by William. Well, William the Conqueror conquered it, fair and square. He came across with an army from Normandy in 1066, and he conquered the island. And his first slaves were the Saxons and the Celts. And then after that, they were in wars with the French over and over again, had very little to do with slavery. Wars against the Spanish, which made them richer, and then the establishment of empire. But I wouldn't relegate them. It shows an ignorance of history to say that they made their wealth off the backs of stolen riches. I mean, remember, at one point the British monarch owned all of North America, all of it, Footstewarts, the whole thing up to the American Revolution, and they still do. The Queen owns Canada, hardly slavery. She owns Australia. Hardly slavery. She owns places like Jamaica, hardly slavery. So just, you know, I mean, I get what you're saying, that it's an easy, it's the most puerile and historically ignorant thing to say, oh, well, they made it off the backs of others. And I'll guarantee that that's exactly the kind of attitude that you'll meet with a lot of people who criticize capitalism online. Oh, but it's all made off the wealth of others. No, actually, Bill Gates didn't go around and enslave people to become the richest man in the world with Microsoft. Neither did Tim Allen, neither did Steve Jobs, neither did even Zuckerberg. These people are not enslaving anybody. If there's anyone who's opted into slavery in terms of Facebook, it's us.
Yeah, so, we can say a lot of things about Zuckerberg. Yeah. Believe you me, listen
I'm,
to your
I'm so show. Glad, Michelle says, I'm so glad that Sia gets his moment with the arrival of the plus one royal. Yeah, he's really a spare. And then a lot of jokes about Prince Philip arriving to see the royal baby and smashing into everything.
Just don't drive, Philip.
And then someone says, the new royal baby, I can't help singing Michael Jackson's Black or White right now. And then some people are saying, my kids have an app that helps with math homework. You take a photo and it gives you the calculation. Wow, that's from Guillermo. That is fascinating because they were already developing this technology. Have you ever used that Translate app?
Like languages?
You take a picture or you scan over a piece of paper in Chinese, for example, in Mandarin, and it'll translate it in real time.
Oh, wow. No, yeah. I haven't.
So, for example, I bought this piece of equipment the other day, and I didn't know what it said on it, on the little buttons and things. So I scanned over on Google Translate, which is just the most amazing app. And you can use that, and then it tells you what each thing does. Which otherwise, I would have had to consult the manual, and the manual's only in Chinese, so I would have had to look up each character. Can you imagine doing that? How time-consuming. So this is one of the best things about being around now. So, Guillermo, that's brilliant.
You know, so
not surprising,
like,
but brilliant.
How do you parent kids who now have homework, but they have apps to calculate everything so quickly? You know, I'm sure parents are in a bit of a pickle going, well, is conventional schooling even helping our kids as much as it could be or should be?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, learning how to learn is really hard. Where to find information, what to trust, whether to accept something on face value. These are the things people are still going to have to go to teachers to learn.
Mm.
And unless you are taught what the resources are and which resources are credible and which ones you can use, and you know, things like how to read, how to add, how to subtract, these are fairly important. If you don't have a basic idea around that, look, I'm no good at mathematics. We've worked this out. Arithmetic is not my strength. It's not a lot of people's strength, but you need to still know what the process is that's going on. If I get this amount in salary this month and I spend this amount, then do I have a deficit or do I have a surplus? These are things that you need to learn. Very basic stuff, obvious stuff when you think about it. But if you don't learn it somewhere, then you're never going to know, no matter how many apps you have to do the calculations for you.
Right.
You know, it's that old idea of just sitting in the classroom and going through those examples until you know what the hell's going on.
Oh.
I had a breakthrough in matric with algebra and geometry, because up to the last year of school, nothing was falling into place. It did not click for me. And then suddenly in final year, I understood geometry. I understood what was going on in algebra and calculus and quadratic equations. And suddenly it all made sense. And you know how? Because I just did example after example, example after example, until I knew what the hell was going on. I mean, it's practice makes perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not logic or reason or skill or a talent. That's just doing it over and over again until you learn the process. And sometimes that's what you've got to do. I mean, in a lot of jobs, once you perfect the process, everything makes sense. Anyway, enough about that. So a little bit later on, we've got Jen Su. She's going to join us on the line. The Met Gala took place. I saw some stuff on my timeline on the Met Gala, which, of course, is the anniversary of Jason Derulo falling down the stairs.
How?
That's what it is.
That's all you remember?
In a pink suit. That's all I really know about.
That's all you remember.
Yeah, that's it. Met Gala. This year's theme is Camp Notes on Fashion.
It's ridiculous.
So it's going to be ridiculous. And we'll speak to Jen Su about the most stupid outfits and just these dumb celebrities. And remember, the whole reason they go there is because Vogue editor Anna Wintour, who is the most powerful woman in fashion, she invites them. And it's a very select little list. And she invites the people she thinks are the most influential in fashion. And it's usually people you'll hear from once in your life, and then you'll never hear from them again. Or if you hear from them more than once, it's not because they're well known for fashion. It's because they're well known for something else.
You know, I think the Met Gala also has its hub and bub, but the basis of it is quite interesting because this event is all put together as a fundraiser.
Is it?
For the Metropolitan Museum of Arts. And I think last year they raised about $12 million in preservation of history in the arts. So it's quite fascinating in that way. There's actually a documentary called First Monday in May, because the gala always falls on the first Monday in May. Mm-hmm. And I watched it a couple of months ago to see how Anna Wintour puts this huge event together. And it's so interesting to see how she just rules things.
She's a very powerful woman.
Like my bad mamma jamma. So there are certain rules, actually, within
that devil,
the Met.
Devil Wears Prada was based on her.
All based on
her.
She's
in actually that way. Like that in real life.
There are certain rules, she says. Like, she wants everyone who attends to mingle. She doesn't care who you are. But if you're at the party, it's actually polite to go out and, you know, get to meet other people and exchange conversations. So even if celebrities arrive there as couples, they don't sit together.
Okay.
You sit on opposite sides of the room because Anna says she wants everyone to mingle around. Oh. You aren't allowed to take selfies there. She does not like selfies at all.
Yeah.
It's just Anna's world and we all live in it.
Yeah. No, she's very powerful, that woman. You know, one click of her fingers and hemlines go so high the world is your gynecologist.
Did you get that from?
You got excited about that, and Then you realized what I was saying.
The world's right. Your gynecologist.
So a couple of things that we need to talk about in the news besides what Sia's excited about, which is the birth of Prince Harry and Meghan's son.
Son.
Right.
Can we call him Jerome just to amuse
whatever.
Me?
You can call him whatever you want.
For the next couple of days.
Dear Gareth and team, this is from Jody, an email that we've got in the email box today. To my absolute delight, I clicked on Listen Live this morning to find a replay of the first ever Gareth Cliff Show on cliffcentral.com. Your show just locked in my interest and has kept me listening for 5 years, says Jody. Happy fifth birthday. May you grow from strength to strength. I miss my Bali's infectious laugh, absolute clarity of mind and sound reasoning. Cutting out the bullshit. I actually heard from Mubs the other day. She sent me a message on our fifth birthday to say happy birthday. And she said she keeps threatening to pop in, but then I'll believe it when I see it.
She's still in that dungeon of hers.
Yeah, she's that's where she's locked up with some guy who, against his will, is being forced to do things. You know, taste her juice and stuff. Leanne kind of reminds me of Karen Walker of Will and Grace. Honey, what's going on here? What's happening? Karen,
would, yeah.
I never watched Will and Grace, so I don't know. Ken Barbinski, the Cliff Central curmudgeon. Only time I listen to sport, even though I have no interest in it, he's an awesome guy. Sia is an inspiring young man. Isn't that nice, Sia?
Oh, that is.
And Late Coming Laws, I love his creative genius. Have a great day, Jody Smith. Thanks, Jody. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, Late Coming Laws, shame, because we've had so many public holidays, we haven't had him on the show in a while. Even tomorrow, we won't have a show, so he's not on. But instead, he's been messaging me like crazy and messaging me some very odd things. He says, you know, Sia, you know, since I won't see you tomorrow, that was last week, he says, can you call me first thing in the morning anyway, just so my day can still get off to a wonderful start?
Oh, my God. Is he mad?
It's just a little weird.
If I'm not working, the last thing I want to do is have Sia call me first thing. All right,
Just before the five things we need to know this morning.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. There's quite a lot of other stuff. I can't wait for these public holidays to be over. I know a lot of people are excited about another day off tomorrow and everybody's going to vote. And really, I think it's enough already. We've had the whole of April's a write-off. If you're trying to do something, I mean, for the last 4 weeks, you get more out of office replies on emails that you send than anything else. People have just decided it's a holiday. And it's almost a longer holiday than people get in December. You know, if you took off a handful of days, you would have got so many in return. I know my brother and sister-in-law went away. I know other people who took off 2 weeks. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's April. It's May. This is not December when everyone's on holiday. It's crazy. So, I can't wait, just from an energy point of view, till we get back to five-day weeks and everybody's actually doing what they said they would. So, in the final episode of Season 1 of Blind History, and we are in discussions to do Season 2 for those people who are fans, the Chinese claim him, but all the world still refers to him, and they do it all the time. Who am I talking about? Confucius, the golden philosopher and teacher who continues to inspire and inform so many conversations and ideas in modern society. The Golden Rule, a criticism of crass materialism and so many wise sayings, were the work of just one man thousands of years ago in Han China. You can go to cliffcentral.com for all the episodes of Blind History. There are 13 of them for you to download and binge if you haven't already. It's brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters, and it's presented by the CEO of Taylor Blinds and Shutters, who's as big a history fan as I am, and me. And you can go and listen to it. They're only 15 minutes long. I know people's time is at a premium. Nobody has time to mess around anymore. And if you would like to join that the elite club of people who now listen to podcasts and get most of their info in terms of really, you know, interesting and imaginative stuff from podcasts, well, you've come to the right place, because that's what we do. That's how we do things here. And if you would like to take part in any of the others, I mean, there's The Naked Economy. By take part, I mean it's a two-way process, you know. A lot of people listen to a podcast and send us an email, and they say they want this added, or they want this in the next episode, and I love that, because it means it's not just me putting stuff out and you just listening to it. It's a conversation. All right. A couple of messages before we get to the five things you need to know today. I am so sick and tired of these holidays. You can't get any work done, says somebody else. Yes, absolutely. That's exactly right. Morning, G. What happened to the Renegade Report? Well, the Renegades are still doing their thing. They're just not doing it on cliffcentral.com anymore. We didn't have any ugly parting of ways or anything. They just, you know, they'd become a brand on their own. And the kind of stuff that they were doing is the kind of stuff that should be standalone. It's powerful and it's strong, and you know, we still play out occasionally an episode or two here or there. But I know they are producing fresh content, and I speak to Roman and Jonathan all the time. Roman, of course, is one of the people who is in the Capitalist Party, which is running. They're running up in these elections for your votes, and certainly making a lot of noise. So if you don't get enough of the Renegade Report, then you can maybe hear Roman in Parliament one day. Wouldn't that be fun? And someone says it's Paul Allen, not Tim Allen, with Microsoft. Correct. Sorry. Dumb.
Oh, man. Tim Allen is the actor.
Tim the Toolman Taylor.
What?
It's Tim Allen.
Okay.
Remember Tim the Toolman Taylor, Home Improvement? That was his show.
Gareth, anything pre Britney Spears Hit Me Baby One More Time.
What year was that?
It's foreign to me.
What year is that?
Well, Hit Me Baby One More Time, I was like 4 years old. Okay. That's when I can retain things and remember.
All free right. That. This is just, the timing is so bad. A potential strike by Permanent Electoral Commission of South Africa workers belonging to the National Education, Health and Allied Workers Union, NAHAWU, has been averted. Thank God. Tomorrow's the election. Imagine if we didn't have the Electoral Commission working on election day.
But they knew exactly that this is the perfect time to strike.
So the commission reached an agreement with NAHAWU after 2 days of marathon negotiations to resolve the outstanding issues. You know, I'm tired of the unions holding us all to ransom like this. And they do it all the time. They know there's going to be a crisis, and then they build up to it, and there's no way out, and they end up getting what they want. It's just brinkmanship in the worst way, not in a positive way. It's bad. It's negotiating in bad faith. You wait for a crisis to develop, and then the only way to solve the crisis is for them to get what they want and for the employer to buckle. And that's what's happened here. They raised concerns of alleged victimization by IEC management and issues around wages. Well, why would they do that the week before the elections? I mean, really? Now, how we said workers had been fighting with the IEC for 3 years for higher salaries over discrepancies in pay structures. And it all comes down to 2 days before the election? It's crazy. Come on. So that strike luckily averted. No major incidents reported on the first day of special voting. One of my friends sent me a picture of, he had his little voting mark on his thumb.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd voted in the special election because they have a company conference from tomorrow and they're not going to be in their home province. They're going away and therefore they can't vote in that province. And he had to cast a special vote.
I also saw a lot of people yesterday, well, a handful of people who voted as a special vote. And I think for some of them, I was raising my eyebrow a bit saying, did you really have to? Because these are resources at the end of the day, which I feel like could have been.
Listen, if you can get in and do a special vote and you don't have to go tomorrow, for whatever reason, why not?
Well, if they're going into a station, I think that's not taking away much. But I know someone who had the IEC come to her house.
Well, if you are disabled...
Just because she's pregnant.
That's a bit cheeky. If you're disabled, I can understand that. There are people who... This is the same people who use a wheelchair at the airport when there's nothing wrong with their legs. You know, it's almost like a cry for attention.
Yeah.
I mean, there are real people who can't walk. They need a wheelchair and you're using it because you just want special attention.
And I feel like you're wasting resources. Yeah, it could have been used for someone else.
I agree with you. Hundreds of thousands of elderly voters and those who wouldn't be able to cast their ballots on Wednesday made use of the opportunity yesterday. The IEC said no major incidents reported, and that was across the country in special voting. The Archbishop Emeritus Desmond Tutu was one of the people who cast his vote at Milnerton in Cape Town. And I mean, if he, because he's really old, if he could walk up to the ballot box and he could cast his vote, there's really no excuse for you. Unless you are disabled. I mean, otherwise you should be really embarrassed. Dutu was not the only one who cast his vote in the comfort of his home. Oh, he did it at home? Oh, right, he did it at home. Okay. And he said, thank you for coming. All right, so he was one of many. There were other people as well. One special voter from Belleville who cast her ballot from her bedroom because of her inability to walk properly. I.E. said, minor challenges reported by election officials on Monday included the late delivery of some materials, last-minute pitching of tents, and a non-arrival of staff due to illness. Okay, but it sounds like it all went well. That's very good news. All right, other stuff you need to know today. We try to make it five things you need to know. So number three is basis for land or death ruling against the BLF is weak, says the Freedom of Expression Institute.
Oh, I saw this ruling yesterday.
So let's get into this. Apparently, the Freedom of Expression Institute said it was concerned about the Equality Court's ruling declaring the Black First Land First slogan land or death hate speech. And you know what? I agree. This is not hate speech. The BLF have certainly been guilty of hate speech in the past, but their slogan, land or death, is not hate speech. FXI director Samkelo Mokeni said that the basis of the decision was weak. Agree. We would agree offhand with the court if Mr. Ngqitama went one step further, for it was clearer to say if we were not given land, these people should be killed. Then it's clear that he's advocating for imminent violence. If he just says land or death, and we're not sure whose death, then it's not hate speech, according to the Freedom of Expression Institute. The Freedom Front Plus, on the other hand, welcomed Monday's decision, with Freedom Front Plus MP Voter Wessel saying the party had been vindicated by the ruling. The BLF is not interested in rule and order and in maintaining a constitutional democracy. We also welcome the fact that it was ruled hate speech because that proves what the FF Plus is saying, that the BLF's constitution is conducive to hate speech and racism, and this is proof. So, BLF leader Andile Mqitama remained defiant on Monday, saying his party would not stop using the slogan, but then I do think he's like a sideshow. He's like a clown outside the circus, and the circus has got its real act going on, and he's like a sideshow. And I just wish...
intentionally to... get attention?
No,
or...
I think he needs the employment and he's paid to be the court jester. Someone is paying him to do this. Someone is paying him to stoke fires on the far left, and I think they're doing it because they need distractions.
Well, ever since you put that idea into my head a few weeks ago, saying, like, what if this is all the ANC?
Yeah, I think it is the ANC. They've got nothing positive to say, the ANC, about their record for the last 5 years. They've got a huge embarrassment in state capture and all these commissions of inquiry. Andile Mqitama distracts people, and he's not... I don't think he believes any of the stuff he's saying. It's just too theatrical and ridiculous. And he's such a nobody. He has to be paid to do this. Remember, he was a Gupta stooge, so this is not... There is a precedent already for him being paid to do stupid stuff and say stupid stuff. So I don't think that that this is anything but proof, again, of the fact that the BLF and Andile are really just a sideshow. It's a bunch of really unemployable, pretty stupid people who are being given money to create... Because look how many people are talking about them. Even we're talking about them this morning, and we shouldn't be. They're unimportant, inconsequential. And then in Juba... South Africa on Monday signed a deal for the exploration and production of oil in South Sudan as part of a $1 billion investment in the conflict-torn nation's struggling oil industry. So Jeff Radebe went up there and described the agreement as a great deal for both countries. Exploration will begin immediately and expected to continue for 6 years. South Sudan has an estimated 3.5 billion barrels of oil, with only 30% of it being explored. So people are saying... country has the third largest oil reserves in sub-Saharan Africa, according to the ministry. At its peak, oil production was at 350,000 barrels a day. However, production has been crippled with oil fields severely damaged by almost 6 years of war. So if they've got all that oil, we should be exploring and finding ways to extract it. Don't you think? And finally, a landmark UN report on the state of nature released on Monday, shows how humanity has wreaked havoc on the environment, undercutting Earth's essential life support systems. This is such hysterical bullshit. You know, the thing that is in danger is humanity. Because the Earth will find a way. You know, George Carlin, my favorite comedian, said, ultimately all the plastic will be folded back into the Earth and burnt up deep in volcanoes and cracks in the crust of the Earth. And ultimately all the carbon dioxide will cause a greenhouse effect, which will create climate change. And we know this is happening. But the one thing that is on the knife edge is humanity, because we are not as strong as we think. We can only inhabit a certain temperate zone between very hot and very cold. We're susceptible to UV radiation. We're susceptible to cosmic rays. If the water cycle isn't good, then we die. So all this crap about the planet is fine. You're not going to solve the planet by stopping, I don't know, driving a gas-guzzling vehicle, or, you know, not buying vegetables with packaging around them. Straws. You're not going to save the planet from using paper straws. Trust me. You may feel better about yourself. You may post it on Instagram and all your friends like it and you think, oh, I've done so much today. You haven't. If you eat meat, that is the third biggest reason for the carbon cycle to be increasing in its volumes, and for excess and unnecessary waste and pollution to be entering the atmosphere and the crust of the Earth. There are other things too. Deforestation is a big issue. I understand all of this, but this idea that we're all about to die, we're like on the edge of the whole of humanity being wiped out, is just hysteria, and it's madness. And why people believe it, I will never understand. Humanity will find technological solutions to these problems like we always have. You know, they say that New York would have shut down. This is in Yuval Noah Harari's book, Homo Deus. New York would have shut down within a year of the horses and carriages that took up the streets, because just there was horse shit everywhere. Like the whole of New York was just covered in horse shit, and it was causing disease, and there wasn't space, and there was overpopulation, and it exploded into a major problem. And then they invented the car. And then within a year or two, enough people had bought cars to have removed enough of the carriages from New York that ultimately the horse problem got under control. And then within about 10 to 15 years of that, there were no horses anymore, or very few. And then the problem had gone. So we find ways of dealing with these things at a human level. And unless you have God powers and you can terraform the Earth, forget about it. You're not going to be able to do anything about this climate change. What are you going to tell everybody in China to please stop using all the amenities the West has? Tell them to stop wearing mass-produced clothing and buying their food like we do, and shopping for stuff that we have, and buying all the technology that they get from factories like we do. Come on. I want to see you try and do that to, you know, China or India or anyone else. They're not going to. All right. Are we going to speak to Jen Su? I'm very excited to speak to Jen. I haven't spoken to her in a long, long time, and there's no excuse to speak to her like the Met, which she says we should rename after Lady Gaga. So let's go straight to her. Let's see what Jen Su has for us. It is what is today? Tuesday morning on cliffcentral.com. She's on Skype. Hey, Jen, how are you?
Hey, Gareth. It is so good to talk to you. Yes, we have to call it the Met Gaga. I mean, I'm so glad that New York isn't wiped out. You're talking about everybody, you know, being wiped out. Well, New York definitely was very hot, was very awesome tonight with the Met Gala, celebrating camp, notes on fashion at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, New York City. Lady Gaga was unbelievable. She spent 16 minutes basically making her entrance in four different outfits.
What is
by Brandon Maxwell?
So it's four different outfits. So where did she change? Inside the Met?
No, she changed like right there on the stairs. I mean, she arrived. She arrived
How does
with
that work?
A huge entourage of suited men.
Yeah.
And Brandon Maxwell, her designer,
right.
who she basically promoted from the very beginning. So, yeah, it was like amazing. It was very theatrical. She came out in this huge fuchsia, you know, magenta gown with an outrageous train. And just, it was gorgeous. It was like, wow. And there was an entourage of umbrella-wielding men, you know, helping her to make sure she had the right pose and everything. Then she stripped down to an asymmetrical black gown. Then she went into a hot pink sort of dress with a giant cell phone and sunnies. Then she stripped down to her bra and fishnet stockings, panties, and super high booties, and was lying down on the pink carpet stairs with coy poses, and then, you know, pumping her butt up and down the air. I mean, she was just crazy. Even Anna Wintour was like, oh my God.
You really have to love fashion. Like, you have to be obsessed with it to be as crazy about it as Lady Gaga is. And the Met is one of those big events. I think it's taken the place of so many runway shows because it's all celebrities. There's a huge amount of media attention. It's one of New York's big social events of the year. You have to get
Absolutely.
An invite to be there. It's not for everybody. A lot of people would love to be there, but they just don't get invited. And I suppose from the point of view of creating something extremely elite and something which is very difficult to get an invite to, Anna Wintour has outdone herself with this, right? It's grown and grown
Absolutely.
And grown.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the, you know, event of the year. This is beyond any kind of award ceremony, way beyond the Oscars or the Golden Globes or the Grammys or any of that. So, I mean, this is where people just, they kill themselves to get invites for this. The celebs are clamoring over celebs trying to get there. And everybody wants to outdo each other. It's all about, you know, getting out there as much as possible. Now, Cardi B was another person who was unbelievable. She had this huge burgundy red Tom Brown gown. It was comprised of, get this, 30,000 feathers filled with down, took 35 people over 2,000 hours to make this gown. It was unbelievable.
Right.
Kim Kardashian was another one. Mugler created a dress for her. He actually, it was his first design in 20 years. It took 8 months to make, and it just looked like she was like all wet and hot and sexy. And I have to say, she looked fabulous. And they had this corset, you know, on her waist that was just so tiny, and then her butt was so huge. I don't know how they actually got those proportions on her. But what's surprising was that Kanye West was kind of like, his outfit cost, let me tell you, the equivalent of 500 Rand. It
what?
Was just a plain old black suit. Yeah, I mean, he could have gone to Mr. Price and like got that thing.
Oh, wow.
It was crazy.
The idea behind the Met? I mean, what is this theme, camp?
So camp, you know, was sort of, it's basically channeling the 1964 Sondheim, you know, the whole thing where basically it's all about just getting out there, being as crazy as you can. It's a whole just over the top magnificence.
Right.
Whatever, you know, that you can do that's just theatrical, exaggerated, glamour, art historical, pomp, circumstance, you know. So
okay.
That's what it was all about. Katy Perry came out in a triple chandelier and then changed for the dinner into a cheeseburger. you know, Jennifer Lopez arrived in this cascading iridescent headpiece and beaded head-to-toe dress with plenty of leg showing. Even A-Rod, you know, Alex Rodriguez, her fiance, he stepped back. He's just like, okay, you take it over, girl. You got it going. Jared Leto arrived in a red long Gucci robe. He had all these chains around it, and then he held a dangling head, and the head, of course, was a replica of his head. And it was actually from the Gucci presentation for Fashion Week.
Wow.
And they said it took months and months, almost like a year, to make that head.
You got
to
admit.
So do you want a head of you, Gareth?
The next time you
come to the Met Gala, you need to actually have one.
No, but I do. I think there's a place for this stuff. I mean, you know, if someone isn't pushing the front the forward edge, the cutting edge of fashion, if people aren't doing ridiculous things in the name of creativity and fashion, then we're never going to know what's nice in between. I mean, you need these extremes, and I think Lady Gaga is, she's like one of the bravest people. You wouldn't wear those outfits. I know I wouldn't. I know that there are plenty of people in the world who wouldn't have the guts.
But there were hats. I mean, Janelle Monáe had this hat on top of a hat on top of a hat that was like awesome. I would wear that hat in 2 seconds. Absolutely.
Yeah, but you've got a hat obsession. I know you. All right.
Kacey Musgraves, she also came out in this like Barbie doll outfit. She arrived in a Corvette with this whole pink, beautiful look from Jeremy Scott of Moschino did this for her, and had a feather stole, a magenta sunglasses, you know, the platinum blonde wig, lots of wigs, lots of these like porcupine sort of fake eyelashes. It was awesome. Actually, I have to say it was one of my favorites. The only thing that was missing, though, was Rihanna was not there. Blake Lively was not there. Beyonce was not there. But Trevor Noah was there.
All right. Yeah. Who cares? Let's talk about someone else. Because he wore a suit. So here's Katy Perry. I saw a picture of her. She looked like a chandelier. She looked like that candelabra from Beauty and the Beast in the animated version.
Exactly. I was just thinking about Be My Guest, you know, that whole like movie.
Katy Perry. Katy Perry's kind of, how come Lady Gaga is considered a fashion icon and Katy Perry's just considered ridiculous?
You know, I mean, Lady Gaga has, I think she's really, though, transcended all genres. She's, you know, branched into film with, you know, A Star Is Born. She's done jazz with Tony Bennett. She, you know, is really a bona fide artist in her own right. And she's been a crazy girl from the beginning.
Yeah.
Katy Perry was, you know, the daughter of ministers. And, you know, she was just much more, she started out very more conservative and then now is like really getting out there. And people are just saying, oh, my God, what's going on with Katy Perry? Is she just doing this for attention or what? I don't know. I mean, look, everybody goes in their own direction, so to say. Some people just start out really crazy and go out more normal. Some people are, you know, go the other way around. I think Katy Perry is one of those who sort of started out a little bit more normal and now has just gone like whacked out. But I love it. I love this outfit. I think it's awesome. I love Zendaya also. She came out with this Tommy Hilfiger gown that was a sort of Cinderella outfit that was all like sort of fluorescent and it was all glow in the dark. They used like thousands of glow sticks and then they had her stylist come out and blow fairy dust on her. It was very, very cool.
Wow. I'm sure there are people in third world countries who never understand what craziness this is, but for the people in the celebrity, in the rarefied air of celebrity, this is just kind of normal behavior. What about Serena Williams? Because she's become a bit of a fashion icon. I mean, she's got her own line of clothing, and Serena doesn't fail to get attention wherever she is.
She was amazing. She came out in this neon yellow Versace gown, and then it had these three-dimensional orange butterflies all over it. And of course, in typical Serena fashion, she paired the long gown with yellow neon Nike sneakers on the pink carpet. She's got this whole thing about wearing sneakers with ball gowns. I think that's what she did at Meghan Markle's wedding. She wore sneakers, you know, under her gown. And that was sort of the whole thing. And people are just loving that trend. you know, it's a little crazy, but it is. It seems to be like really holding on. And of course, she's hosting the after party, the Met Gala after party, which is going on now, actually, with Kim Kardashian, with Trevor Noah, Lala Anthony, and Trevor Scott, those guys.
Yes, you mentioned
Travis Scott. They're all doing this after party as well.
You mentioned right Kim Kardashian. I mean, the Kardashians and the Jenners have become like a fixture. And these people really are like they're just huge celebrities, regardless of what you feel about them. You mentioned Kanye West earlier. But the rest of the whole clan, like everyone in that family is now famous just for being on that show.
I mean, even Kris Jenner looked great tonight. She wore this blonde wig. She looked fantastic. I forget how old she is.
Was Caitlyn there?
She looks like I did not see Caitlyn, and Caitlyn was not in the group photo. Even Corey Gamble, who is Kris Jenner's boyfriend, was there, but I did not see Caitlyn. And actually, it's kind of sad because, you know, I think one really great thing about this year's Met Gala was that they really championed the, you know, LGBTQ community. And I think that actually if Caitlyn was there, it would have been good. I don't know. There might have been some drama why she wasn't actually there, or was she not invited, or what happened. You know, you always find out these things afterwards. So,
all right.
But the rest of the Kardashians and Jenners really looked great. I thought that I also thought the Kylie and Kendall. Wow. Kylie was in lavender. Kendall was in orange. Those guys looked phenomenal. Really amazing.
Well,
like, you know, these outfits took months, if not a year, to create.
If anybody wants to see any of these outfits, you can go and see them. Jen has posted pictures of them up on Twitter. You can go underscore Jennifer underscore Sue is her Twitter handle. If you want to go and have a look.
That's right.
And you'll be able to see Cardi B and Lady Gaga and the bizarre bodily shape of Kim Kardashian, who's looking weirder than ever. But Jen, how are you doing otherwise? What are you up to these days?
Oh, well, I have been busy. I've been doing a lot of galas in New York City. I just did one with the James Beard Foundation.
Yeah.
And that was great. I also just saw Fergie yesterday at the Philadelphia Wine Festival.
Oh, nice.
She's taking a little bit of a break from the Black Eyed Peas, and she's spending more time with her dad, who is recovering from cancer, and she's we're sort of developing her Ferguson Winery. They have a family winery.
Wow.
So she's been doing that. And I've been spending a lot of time in hospital with my son, who has been undergoing cancer treatment for the last year and a half.
Right.
And there's some good news I have to share, which is he was in a wheelchair for 7 months. He has now started walking.
Yay.
This is really huge.
This is such good news. Jen,
it's
I'm
wonderful
so happy
news.
To hear that. Oh, that makes me feel much, much better. I was, you know, I've been kind of updating. And the nice thing about social media, and we must never really take this for granted because it wasn't possible before, but I can kind of keep track with what's going on in your life, what's going on in Sammy's life. And it's just cool to check in with you and see what's happening.
Thank you.
Actually speak to you in person like this, but to just see what's going on. And I know it couldn't have been easy the last couple of years, but lots of love from our side.
Thank you. Lots of love to all of you. I really miss you at Cliff Central, but I'm glad that we connect like this, you know,
absolutely.
We keep connecting. And so, I mean, the world is small now.
Well, thank you for letting us know about the Met, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Yes. Thanks, and thanks for all the support. I really appreciate it.
Anytime. Thanks, Jen. There's Jen Hsu live from New York City and the Met Gala, where Sia would like to go more than any other place in the world. I guarantee it. If you gave Sia the option of going to the moon or going to Meghan Markle's bedside or the Met Gala, it would be the Met Gala every time. If you let Sia go into the gold vault in the bank of America, the Bank of New York, or in Fort Knox, where they store all the gold, and you gave him the option of going to the Met Gala, he'd take the Met Gala, right?
Yeah, Met Gala would be...
Is there anywhere you'd rather go?
The third in the top three.
Oh, Oprah's house.
Is number one. The Promised Land in Montecito, California.
Is that what it's called?
She calls it the Promised Land, yes.
Oh, my God.
They're the 12 apostle trees in her garden.
Yeah.
Because she just planted trees.
Okay, that's a lot of information.
Man-made lake.
All right. When we come back, we'll get into
the
some
train
news.
On all right, the
thank
estate.
You, Sia. We'll get into a whole lot of really exciting stuff and stuff that doesn't involve Oprah's house and landscaping.
What's more exciting than that?
And we'll get into your messages too. If you want to get hold of us, 0797482090, cliffcentral.com. Tuesday morning.
This is cliffcentral.com.